you know? And he's trying to tell me that I can't do what I want to do somehow with the code. And it goes back and forth, and then he says mean things to me, and then I cry. Not actually, I would like to know. So next up, because no one and nothing is sacred, I want to talk about developers. Now, I'm sure some of you know who I am, and I'm sure lots of you do not. Permission to quote him, but who couldn't forgive me? It's on Twitter. So Kevin Clark said, "We're artists because we're a little fucked up. Code is just our canvas." Now I know a lot of people at this conference, people who love Ruby, are like this. I'm not saying that people who are developers are less artistic. It's just you express yourselves in a different way. Because the question that guides what you do is how. This is why Ryan and I can't understand each other, because he's asking how, and I'm going, what? Not just to him, but to the world. How is about implementation. It's about making it work. It's about the connection of the concepts. I'm sorry, you can't really read that, can you? The connection of the concepts, how do things fit together, the data, the services, and this is more philosophical than it may look from, you know, the whiteboard picture, because you have to understand at a philosophical level how these things fit together to make something work, and that's tough. And it's about functionality. How does it work? Not just how do the pieces go together philosophically, but how does it actually work? What does it do functionally? What things can you do with it? Because software, or kind of writing software, is like building tools, because you have to anticipate what a person will do when they pick up that tool, and you can't. And so the developers, you have to figure that out. And finally, it's about implementation. You take this concept, you probably had a designer on the project, or you serve as the designer, you figured out how the pieces fit, and then you have to take it and you have to breathe actual life into it. You have to create this thing that's practically alive, that moves and does things and interacts with the world, and that's the hard part. So now that we talked about the different mind frames, people coming together, butting heads, like a little bit about process, the other half of the equation. How do you get into something from the beginning and go to the end with people who must interact but have very, very different viewpoints, serve very, very different purposes? Because it's really important to figure out how you work together, because designers need developers and developers need designers. There are few people like me who do both, and I'm not the best programmer ever, certainly. And so I would prefer to have someone who really knows what he's doing or she's doing, working on the code. And pardon me, we can't live in a vacuum. And yet, a lot of these processes have something in common. It's my personal philosophy that you should get designers involved as early and as often as possible. The very first thing you have to address is, what are you building? And again, it doesn't matter if you actually have a separate human being working on this question or if you, it is you yourself, but I believe early and often is the number one rule when you're developing your development process. The second question you have to answer is, where is the handoff? Now, often projects don't have a real, honest to God, hardline handoff time. There's collaboration, which we'll talk about in a second. But you do need to know, where do you kind of draw the dotted line? Where does it go from the what stage to the how stage? And then once you figure that out, you also have to create a feedback loop. Because nothing can be finished, really, if you just start and then hand it off to another person and they have to run with it and then they have to go to the finish line by themselves. It's an interactive process. Now I'm going to show you a few process graphs, actual flowcharts, I'm sorry, for how I work and how a couple other people who I've interviewed work. Can you see the blue line, guys? Okay, good. That designates the handoff point. In this case, this is how I like to work with Eric, for example. I don't like HTML and CSS. I certainly know how to do it, but I feel like it's not something I want to spend a lot of time doing, and I have the luxury of avoiding that at times. So the way I work is I work with paper sketches, and then I move to Photoshop comps, and then there's the the feedback fairy dust. It's like a network cloud, but worse. You can go in, you can go out, but there's never a clear way through. And then after you go to the magic feedback cloud, hand off the Photoshop mocks to the developer, who then has to deal with the HTML and CSS and turning it into an actual application. So I hand off in a stage where absolutely nothing works. It's just an image and it has to be turned into something real. And Eric's nodding with a disgusted look on his face. That gentleman has to put up with my Photoshop mockups. I'd like to note that I only feel comfortable doing this because when I design, I know more than enough about HTML and CSS to ensure that I'm doing something that's possible and reasonable. This is the way Scott Raymond and the gentleman at Firewheel Design work. Scott was generous enough to tell me about their unusually designer-friendly process. Scott works at a company called Firewheel Design, Scott Raymond, as I'm sure. Well, maybe some of you saw his talk on REST, which was great. What he does is his three designer coworkers will actually create the entire site essentially in HTML and CSS, and then plot the full page designs in HTML and CSS into a public directory under a subdirectory called prototypes. And then Scott, it's his sole responsibility to go in and take these apart, pardon me, and implement them page by page as controllers, models, and views, and layouts, and so on. So basically, they hand Scott a finished piece, and then he goes and does it. Now, there's no fancy feedback cloud on this graph, but I'm sure that they actually do interact at some point. Scott's a friendly guy, and I can't imagine that not happening. Now, there are problems, pardon me, there are problems with this process as well. You have to be working with people you can trust to provide like a full specification in the interface that they give you, and then you have to interpret it as a developer. And so that can be sketchy, but if you are working closely with people, people you understand, you're on the same wavelength, this can work. This is a process that I think is most facilitated by Rails. This is actually the most interactive process. You still got the paper and the Photoshop and the magical feedback fairy dust, but then the developer and the designer work together on the views. So the concurrently, the developer is working on the Rails models and controllers, and then they come together at the views section, which works great if you have a designer who knows a little bit of Rails, which I'll talk about in a minute. And if not, well then, part of the talk is about bringing up your designers so they can know a little bit about Rails and achieve this almost idealized workflow. And this is from my friend John Fade, who runs a small consulting company called Meticulous. Since the first step of all of these processes is design, I wanted to show you what design can look like. It can be as simple as a completely random sketch in a notebook, such as this, all the way through more formal sketched wireframes. These are done by John, who's an architect, which you can tell by the handwriting, I think, much better than mine. This is how I think, including the completely legible handwriting. You never ever want to read anything I write, it's impossible. The next step up are wireframes created, still in grayscale, black and white. They show much more detail than, say, this or this. And beyond that, you can get workflow type thingies going on. This is the kind of specification I provide to the guys I work with at my company. To show the heavy interaction of the thing that we're building, I've created awful, awful graphics like this with all the arrows and notes and call outs. And it seems to work much better than the hand waving and the sketching on the whiteboard. The hand waving, though, is the best part. It's just not as effective as actually documenting things. Next step up, you might have the individual steps in a process like this. further detail, call-outs, showing where users click, what happens when that, and so on and so forth. And basically the next step up is Photoshop. So this is a project I haven't announced yet, but I thought I would give you a little preview. And this is revision one, so you can tell it's not done. But it is called Pip My Rails. So hopefully that'll win its point. And just some more Photoshop. Fully realized, mocked up, ready to go pretty much. These are incredibly time consuming. So if you're gonna start with the design stuff, you should start like this. Or you should request that your designer starts like this. You should work with the client on this end and not do this part till the end. Because it takes a really, really, really long time. And really, it doesn't help you as a programmer, as a developer, it doesn't really help you any more than actually getting the sketches. It doesn't really help you to know what color pink that top bar is. You just need to know that it's there. So I'd like to talk a little bit about getting along, because that's part of the problem, is you can understand the other person, you may still not get along. You're smiling again, Eric. I'm sorry. I'm hard to work with. Collaborate. No more vanilla ice jokes, but it really is important that you try to work and hang together as a team. It's so easy when you're butting heads, when you're coming from a different viewpoint, to face off and get the face-off mentality. And I can't tell you how many times I've worked someplace or worked with someone, and we were both sitting there thinking, God, I'm the only person who fucking does anything in this company. You suck. You suck. I'm awesome. You suck too. And I'm looking at you, Robbie. And that basically screws the project, because the moment you start thinking of it like a zero-sum game, you lose. You all lose. The project loses. You may get sued. It's happened once to me. So don't do it. Try to work together. And developers, please don't dictate things to the designer. And designers, please don't dictate things to the developers. No one likes to be dictated to. And if your children put together puzzles, let them do it themselves. You know, don't like, there. And this is really, I think, the biggest barrier, is that people, they get the me versus you mentality going. And then they tell the other person what they have to do. It's completely destructive to a team atmosphere. It changes the whole outlook of everyone involved. So work together. It's easier said than done. Some specific advice I'd like to give you. Developers, most of this is aimed at you. Show, don't tell. You can sit there and you can tell me about how the objects interact or how to use subversion and all that stuff, and it's gonna go right out my other ear. My dad and I used to have these long talks in the car, and we talk about things like depth of field or, you know, fuel-injected engines, because I'm a nerd. And he'd be trying to describe how it worked, and there's just no way that I could ever understand it from his conversations. But then I'd go home and I'd look it up on like ehow.com or whatever, and there'd be the animation of the four-stroke engine. I'm like, that's why they call it four-stroke. Okay, now I get it. The important thing to remember is you have to show designers how things work. This is great for everyone in general, but programmers, especially career programmers, so much better at imagining these things that don't really exist in their heads and put it together. It's really hard. I mean, I can imagine unicorns, but it's harder for me to imagine objects interacting when they don't really exist, just like unicorns. I'm sorry to disappoint you, they don't exist. So if you're trying to teach your designer something, sit down with them, go through the motions and actually show them. If you want to show them how not to screw up the subversion repository, and you really should, break it in front of their very eyes. Watch them suffer, and then come in and save them. And they'll love you, because that kind of psychological trickery really works. So don't just sit there and describe the code, because it's not gonna work. Show them. This goes out to both people, but mostly developers. Can't tell you how many times I've designed something which is, in theory, technically feasible, and then I've just been told, can't do that. But because I'm a programmer too, and kind of savvy, I can say, bullshit. You don't want to. So, but it's really destructive to the team environment to say, oh, you can't do that. You can't do that. There may be reasons why you could do it a different way, or why it would be difficult and, you know, damaging to the project because it would take a really long time or anything like that. But this goes back to the dictating thing. Don't say can't, say won't. And then, not really, that was a joke. No, caught it. I'm not serious. Don't say won't either. It's a bad word. Say, there may be a problem with that. Everything involves trade-offs, and designers can't be good at their jobs if they don't understand what the trade-offs are. And they can't always understand the trade-offs unless they also go and do your job too, and you don't want them to do that, and they don't want to do that. So you have to communicate your special knowledge to them and vice versa. And I'd like to say that design is not fluff. Explaining things, showing things, thank you. It's not fluff, it's just different. And plus, you should never eat that stuff. Now here's the biggest bit of advice I have for designers with regards to communication. We as a species, and I mean designers as a species, have a tendency to not explain the underlying thing that we're looking for. We might say, oh, it has to work this way. And the developer may come back and say, well, there's a reason we can't do that in this time frame, for example. And then we pitch a little designer fit, throw around our berets and so on, like, stomp on our toys and go, we have to do it this way that I designed it, like this, no changes, that's it. When really, we need to be communicating the reason that we think that that has to be that way, because once you communicate the reason you think that it has to be that way, then the developer can go and say, okay, your underlying reason is that you don't want people to have to reload the page to log in. Okay, maybe we can do this a different way. So we shouldn't be specifying technical details, and developers shouldn't be specifying like user interaction, design details. But if we can just come together and explain what we're actually thinking, we can figure it out. I'm going to have to go kind of quickly through the end here so we have time for questions. And if I don't get to your question, just come up to me later. I'm pretty friendly, especially if you get me drunk first. So I did promise to talk a little bit about Rails. This is RailsConf. I would like to say that programming is hard. Let's go shopping. Maybe just the first part. Okay, maybe just the first part. It's easy to underestimate how difficult it actually is to form these mental models like I talked about, you know, unicorns and objects. Hold it all in your head. When we're working on something that doesn't actually exist, you can't take it apart with your fingers and say, okay, the piston goes in here, because it doesn't really exist. It exists only in our minds. And if you're a fan of subjective reality, it exists nowhere else. But we're fans of objective reality. It actually doesn't exist in the computer, but it's not a physical thing you can play with. Programming is like the ultimate black box. And it's difficult. It's difficult to learn to do that. It took me a long time to figure out how to write loops. I had to draw diagrams. It hurt. I felt code dyslexic, you know. And so just keep in mind that what you do, developers, is difficult. What designers do is difficult too, but I think it's a slightly more human task. So keep that in mind. Programming is hard, but Rails makes it a lot less painful than it has to be. Embedded Ruby, I think, is one of the better templating languages I've used. And guys, I'm anti-templating language in general. I think that every templating language makes things worse, but that is my personal opinion as a designer and a person who's used them all. So you should listen to me, but I'm just gonna trail off now. Active record objects, they're human friendly. You're like, okay, I have a person and I want the name. Okay, I can just add some punctuation and get the name. Object, don't underestimate how simple active record objects can be if you help people out. Some designers who have no programming experience or templating experience at all don't understand the idea of page includes. They don't understand views and partials and layouts. But all it takes people is a little drawing you can draw. Okay, here's the outside. This is the layout. It's the frame. And then the content for the layout goes in this box. And that's kind of dynamic. That depends on where you are. There's no designer in the universe who's not going to understand that. If you draw a picture, add some arrows, maybe add a smiley face, you know, it'll be good. Also, we're not stupid. Like, even designers who don't code at all, not dumb. You can say, okay, this thing and these brackets and the percentage sign, don't touch that. Don't touch that. You're good, okay? Just don't touch. It'll work. you know? But there are ways to make it even friendlier than it is already. And here's a list. There's more, but I can only include so many. Write Ruby code for them. If they're not developers at all, write the code for them. Add some comments. Tell them, okay, work inside this sandbox and don't go out. And that can work. You can create cheat sheets, and by cheat sheets, I don't mean what I do, I just mean lists of, say, here you have a person object. When you're working with the person object, you can access these values, and here's how to do it. Designers will respond to that. They'll be like, oh, I can look up this piece of paper, and then I don't have to go to Mr. Developer and sound like a moron, and he'll listen to his snide comments about my beret. Document stuff, designer friendly. It's not that tough, and it helps so much. Write helper methods. Helper methods are good. Lots of comments in your code. If you're the one writing the ERB, comment stuff, comment. Beginning of loops and the end of loops and what's going on inside and what objects are available inside each view and all that stuff. It's just a little bit of effort to save you all so much time. And don't forget to teach them about subversion. And I do recommend doing the oops, you blew up the repository example in person, and explaining what it means when you blow up the repository, and what it means is death. So, in conclusion, all you really need is love and process and maybe a little fireside sing-along once in a while. We have a few minutes for questions. Excellent.
Given your negativity about templating languages, which I totally agree with, what do you think about the kind that where they just add like a single attribute to the HTML tag that seems to be popular in certain ones, but that I don't know if it's really caught on in Rails?
I think they're too magical. Okay. I mean, designers understand classes. Oh, I'm sorry. He asked what I thought of templating languages that operate by adding attributes to the HTML tag. Like, what's that one that's Ruby friend? Markdaby? Is it Markdaby? That generates loops and stuff based on the IDs you give things, something like that. I probably have the name totally wrong. I don't use them. MasterView. Okay. Basically, when you're creating loops without actually referencing any loops or data, I find that a bit harder to understand than actually saying, okay, this code does stuff. I don't like hiding complexity. I think that makes things worse, to a degree. But then again, I do use Rails, so. Next question. Gentleman with the hat.
It's a popular opinion that a pretty big divide between designers and developers. That seems to be a popular opinion, but they may not argue that. But how do you feel Rails affects that?
Well, I can tell you that I got into Ruby on Rails by accident. I was part of a designer community called Yay Hooray, and they put Basecamp up there for like designer input. I checked it out, I'm like, oh, that's cool. And then one day I was just reading the interwebs and I saw something about built with Basecamp. Basecamp was built with this thing. And I looked at the code sample and just, I saw one controller and I fell in love. It was like an aesthetic reaction, immediate. And it turns out, you know, that it was valid love at first sight. But I think that Ruby on Rails really, we like pretty things. That it boils down to. Now, I think Ruby on Rails tries to make things human along the same way that Ruby makes things human. And say interacting with a person object, you could do person.name, so much better than dealing with like an associative array, stuff like that. I think that Ruby on Rails is more designer friendly. It's so structured and object oriented in a way that makes sense. And so I think that it can be a powerful tool for bootstrapping people into programming. And I would have liked to talk about that lots, but I only have, 45 minutes and not like 5 hours. But get me drunk. I will go on for hours. I promise. So, does that answer your question? Awesome. Anyone else? David?
Design seems it's hard to find as uniforms, but I'm pretty sure you're real.
I am real. I am a real girl. Yes. Beret shops. So my friend Jonathan, a couple examples from this were from him, because he has so much prettier handwriting. He and I are creating a designer like co-op / collective called Hyphenated People. Now it's not up yet, so I have no URL for you or anything, but We're trying to solve that problem by basically creating a small designer army. In theory, people who also know a little bit of programming here and there, so ever more valuable. Speaking of which, designers, if you want to really make your career better, learn to program a little bit. Like, no joke, you'll be rolling in the bucks. So I'm trying to work on that problem because I get so many requests for design and I have no extra time. So basically, I want to find a farm, you know, spread it around a little. But beyond that, I think that the internet is the biggest resource, and that other than that, you just have to have luck. So, you already got one. Are there any other questions? You, sir.
In your process diagram, where do you like to interact with the clients?
Never. That's the, like, feedback fairy dust. No, I do a lot of like interviewing on the front end, and then I'm all about iterative processes, so, or processes, whatever. Sketches go to the client and back and forth. I find that the more polished a product you give the client, the more freaked out they get. So sketches keep it in the realm of the real, and you don't go to Photoshop until almost near the end, until it's already been approved. And then if they try to font twist, kill them. Does that answer your question? But really, you probably have to involve them all along. It depends on the kind of client, unfortunately.
In your process, do you generally have, when you're dealing with a client, do you usually bring a good designer and a developer to get both perspectives?
I would absolutely do that.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. So the question was, when you're working with the client, do you take just the designer or do you take designer and developer, like, to client meetings? Absolutely. If you're not the same person, bring them both. Bring them both. Just don't let the developer talk too much.
On the subversion thing, do you want to show the designer that if they break it, they can fix it or not petrified of it?
Yes. Okay. The killing them, the telling them that they'll die, that was a joke. Don't actually threaten them with violence. That's not legal. The question was, do you actually want to show the designer that it can be fixed if they screw up? Well, yes, that's the point of subversion entirely. I mean, it's going to take a while for them to get the idea of merges, so you're just going to have to be patient while they screw things up. But once they get it, they'll get it good. So, yes, don't tell them that they'll die. Tell them it can be fixed. That's the whole point. You, sir? I have read Getting Real, and I was like, ha! This is how I work. I feel validated. If you haven't read Getting Real, I do recommend it because it's so easy to get swamped with details and get bogged down and never finish things, and Getting Real really does help. That's Getting Real by 37 Signals, who, of course, you know, fathered Ruby on Rails, so I'm sure you can find it. And it's good to reread it every once in a while because it's easy to get bogged down in details. Now, the problem is if you interact with clients never want to do that. But hopefully you can beat them in the submission. So, tell me for one more question. You in the back? How is Ajax development best split between designers and developers? I would say I do a lot of wireframing. And I'm a fan of paper prototyping, where you can, you know, cut out little pieces of paper and pretend it's work, and then pretend to click things and flip the paper over and all that stuff to mock up in real life the interactivity that Ajax allows. I would say that a lot of it does depend on the designer's conception of how the site works for the user, but it's also really important that there's a communication channel between the designer and developer, what's possible, what's feasible, what is, you know, degradable, that sort of thing. And the designer's not necessarily going to already know all that. So I think that you cannot do one or the other. You have to work together, which is basically the point of my presentation, therefore my answer is a cop-out. Sorry. If you have a specific, like, scenario, please, you know, come up and I would be happy to give you some more information on that particular situation. We have time for one more. I'm sorry, what was that? Wireframing tools, paper and pen are the best. And the other wireframes I showed that were actually on the computer screen, I used OmniGraffle, but it doesn't really matter what you do use. I do obscene things in OmniGraffle. Like, all my cheat sheets are designed in OmniGraffle. It's so not made for that. It's just a tool I'm comfortable with. There's also Visio, which is probably way too much overhead. There are any number of cheap little drawing applications. As long as you can draw squares and type, you can use that to wireframe. That's the critical part, squares and type. All right. Thank you all so much.